the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. Kevin Attard and Steve Asmussen having joined us. Rich Migliori, hour two. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I didn't hear the segment with Steve, but thrilled for his son Keith winning his first race. I mean, just the sheer joy on Steve's face in the photo I saw after the race, the whole family. And then, you know, your mind starts to wander back. And I remember when, you know, Steve came to New York as an apprentice. And I was, you know, I'd been friendly with Cash, rode with Cash, and Cash left for France. And he said, yeah, my kid brother's coming up. And, you know, became friendly with Steve back then. I mean, you know, it was obvious he was struggling to make weight. It was amazing that he ever rode at all. But now that his son's doing it, it's just amazing, the full circle. So thrilled. I mean, what nice young men that Steve and his wife have raised. Really, really good kids.
No doubt. And I tried to see with Steve if there was any arm twisting or convincing of Julie to let him ride it. But he sort of was wading into it, and it seemed like it was something of a fait accompli that he was going to be involved. It's got to be hard. When you've got a family history like this, and from grandfather to father and uncle, and it just seems like it's going to be a natural at some point. I mean, and just the fact, Rich, you look around, there's so many sons and daughters. Your lifelong friend, career friend, Robbie Davis. I mean, look at the brood of jocks that Robbie sired.
Wow, it's incredible, and you think about, like you're saying, racing families, and certainly the Asmussen family is a dynasty. Look at what they've done on a consistent basis for so many years, turning out good horses. Their three-year-olds are so professional. Why? Because Steve's dad breaks him. Cash is down there working with him. His mom, everybody. I mean, the whole family. It's just really an amazing thing. And Robbie with his kids. Now, Eddie Davis training a winner the other day at Saratoga, but I'm so thrilled that none of my kids Joey wanted to become a jockey, but Joey's even taller than Keith. And it's pretty remarkable that Keith was able to do that, you know, to ride it, because he's a tall kid. But, Joey's in it on a different end. But my daughter's riding, you know, horses now out at Hits and Southies, and I'm a nervous wreck. I don't know how they do it. I couldn't take it. Robbie, you have three kids in one race the one winter day. Two of them went down in the same spill. You just put me in a straitjacket.
I know it, and I, you know, we talked to Robbie about it between Katie and Dylan and. I haven't seen the eldest. What's the eldest daughter's name? Jackie. Thank you. I haven't seen anything what she's up to.
Last I saw, she was riding at Penn National, but I'll be honest with you, I have not been paying close attention. I applaud it, and I think it's great, but I just know. Like I said, you know, my daughter's riding, and she's riding show horses and schooling horses. And, you worry. You know what can happen. It's not, you know, it's fine if it happens to me. It's not cool if it happens to my kid,
You know, mentioning the Davises, everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people jumped down her... they kind of pounced on her. She misjudged the two finish lines at Laurel last week. Did you see that?
Well, it happened.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's perfect. Things happen. The thing that gets me, and listen, it's fine to criticize. It's part of it. If you're going to do anything in the public eye, there's criticism going to come with it. But 90-some-odd percent of the people that are so quick to jump on stuff and criticize probably have never put themselves out there to fail publicly, to be the goat. And I don't mean the greatest of all time. I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, sure, of course.
It's so easy. It's so easy to criticize when you haven't been. Like, perfect example, years ago, living in Floral Park, they would have a block party every year. I was always reluctant to go. First of all, because I couldn't eat. And one night, Carmel was like, our kids are young, come out, meet the neighbors, hang out. And I rode all day. Some of the guys there, several beers, and so they're a little loud and less filter. And one guy goes, "Yeah, what happened in the third race the other day at Belmont? What, that horse got beat? You got in trouble?" Yeah, and here we go, right? So I asked the guy, "Bob, what do you do for a living?" He goes, "Well, I'm a plumber." I said, "Well, how would you like if I was standing over your shoulder critiquing how you were fixing a toilet?" Or, and he was getting a little hot on the gun, his friends were ragging him then. But that's what it's like. I mean, listen, I it comes with the territory.
I love it.
But I think there's also has to be some understanding. Just, it's such a difficult job anybody that, again, is in the public eye and, throw that pressure on top of it. And then, being a jockey is a performance based business. If you do not win, you make very little money, and if you do not win, you get less and less mounts. So it's a constant, having to perform at the highest level and deliver. You have to deliver. And I don't see jockeys win the Kentucky Derby and they go, "Hey, you just won the Kentucky Derby, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to Disney World." No, you're flying to back home to New York to ride, or California, or wherever. It's constant, and it never ever stops. So I just wish people would lighten up a little bit. And again, you can look at a ride and go, "Yeah, that was a bad ride. You should have done this." And I criticize as a broadcaster. My criticism comes when I feel like a rider didn't prepare, and that's usually evident to me. I can see when a guy didn't do his homework, and there's no excuse for not doing the work. You can make a bad decision, but that decision has to be based on something that you anticipated or you knew. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. And I always say this too, as a rider, for myself, if I made an aggressive mistake, I could live with that. If I made a passive mistake and somebody kind of, made the decision for me, then I didn't do my job. And so when I see a rider do something and it blows up, but it was obviously a thought process behind it and it didn't work, but it was an aggressive thing. Hey, guy was trying to win. Girl was trying to win. That's all you can do.
Well, and on that topic, let's fold a couple of things in. And I having talked to Steve Asmussen and, you're watching as much as anybody as part of the broadcast team, the situation in the Vanderbilt, and the timing has been reconsidered, but regardless of the timing, whether it was whether they went in 21-3 or 24 flat, there was nobody that was pouncing on Volatile and wanting to engage. And I made the case on TV yesterday, Rich, that's part of the frustration with these smaller, particularly stakes fields, because while the performance may be fine and quite credible, it isn't necessarily a read on the horse's ability under duress against good horses. And, this was a good, the four that left the gate were four nice horses. But what do you make of this, this scenario, and what's your takeaway? And then I want to fold in the maximum security mid-court situation, and you can even do that yourself as part of the answer in terms of the aggressiveness shown by John Sheriffs and Victor Espinoza to take the race to maximum security versus what transpired in the Vanderbilt.
Well, first of all, you would have to say traditionally, historically, maybe historically is a better word for this. California racing and riding tactics have always tended to be more aggressive. For a number of years, it obviously had a lot to do with the racetracks carrying speed and the way the kickback would come back in California. Not so much anymore. The tracks have changed, but big clods and horses wouldn't run through the clods. Some horses don't like running through kickback anyway, but when they're clods and they're really banging them up, some horses just, well, I ain't doing that. So I think the tactics have always been more aggressive in California, and certainly the trainers out there and owners are much more understanding or forgiving if you go too fast and get beat, where New York traditionally, going back to before I started riding, 40-some-odd years ago, if you opened up and got caught, you got really criticized. So I think it created this mindset that you just didn't want to go too fast on these deeper, sandier New York tracks and save horse and finish. So I think it already had set kind of a tone going back over the years. Now, that being said, I applaud the tactics, John Sheriffs and Victor Espinoza going, taking it to maximum security. You let him gallop to the lead, you can't beat him. So how can you beat him? And forget trying to be second or third. You're trying to win the race. And they almost pulled it off, being aggressive. Now, the Vanderbilt's an odd situation, Steve, because it scratched down the four. It looked like the other horse that could engage was Lexingtoni. And now Volatile hasn't shown that he needs to be on the lead. He's going to be involved because he's naturally fast. And if you watch Ricardo Santana's posture leaving the gate, he broke out of the gate as though he was going a mile and a quarter, not six furlongs, because the complexion of the race changed so entirely with the scratch of Lexingtoni and what took place that he knew that he was just going to kind of gallop to the lead. Mind Control, I think, tried to keep pace with him, but Mind Control's not a speed type. Whitmore has been laying closer this year than in some previous years, but he's not really a speed type. Forens Fire, I guess he could have showed a bit more speed, but I think just this was purely happenstance, the way things transpired, in the starting gate. And I will say this, though. I think there was so much hype going in about Volatile that anything he did less than maybe winning by 10 or breaking a track record, people weren't going to be satisfied coming off that 112 buyer and the Aristides and the race he ran there, right? But in some ways, this was so impressive because he's got horses that are naturally more inclined to close in very close proximity to him, and he just outfooted them, which he was supposed to do if he's a good horse, but they came home in 11-3. How many times do you see a sprint race finish faster on the dirt than it started, or as fast? So in some ways, you could say this was impressive in its own right. The other thing, I think this horse kind of tends to, like Steve, prepares horses for what they're going to do. And they continually get better. Now, people could say this was a step back, but do you want him to go to that well every single time, go as deep as he can into his talent pool and use himself up so that he's worn out and tired? I see it a lot with people overmatching their horses. You have a horse that's a good, solid 16,000 claimer, and then people are constantly running for 25 or 30, and the horse is running races good enough to win for 16. And then by the time he gets to 16, he's done because he's given all that he had to give. You have to make those count. When a horse goes to the well, reaches down and gets all the visibility, you've got to put him in a position to win, to succeed, because he can only do that so many times. And I say that good horses have more of those A efforts in them. But if they can win races with their B and C efforts, they'll have those A races to go to when they really need them. So, I think like Barry Schwartz having some brilliantly bred and very talented New York breds over the years, a horse that can win open company, but he has the luxury of winning a New York bred maiden race with his C effort, a D effort, then winning the A other than New York breds with a C effort. And now he's got to go an open A other than, and now he steps up to his B effort. They have an opportunity to build into having to run their hardest to succeed. So I think the race for Volatile was very good. Does it tell us any more about him? Probably not. I mean, we saw his brilliance in Churchill Downs. This was workmanlike, but very good. So I don't, personally, I still think it was very good. And I don't know if that answered the question, if I kind of meandered, but...
Well, you definitely floated out off the turn. It's you didn't herd, but when you were on a horse that and in a setting, Rich, and obviously the circumstance, you know, got even more tortured with Lexingtonian having to scratch, and you know, makes things even more difficult. But how do you balance? I mean, do you ever, as a jock, do you say to the trainer, you know, when a trainer says, "What do you think here?" You know, which is, you get that, you know, a lot of times, and you know, you say, "Well, if we let him, you know, if we let so and so go, if we let Volatile go, we can't win." I mean, I suppose it. A part of this is what the needs are of the circumstance. And, you know, now it's a four-horse field, and there's the potential, you know, to get a grade one placing. Do people think, well, we're not going to win this, you know, we probably can't beat him, so let's make sure we, you know, we get a top placement as best we can?
I think it's more prevalent, though, with fillies and mares because it enhances their value so much, being, you know, grade one placed or graded stakes placed, that you will definitely sometimes ride a filly or mare to, like, make sure you at least hit the board. I think it's less prevalent with the boys because it's not going to enhance their value near as much. I'm sure they went in with one plan because Jack Sisterson had said kind of publicly, yeah, we're going to go, we're at the rail, this horse is going to show speed. And then when he scratched, guys have already kind of discussed with their trainers, well, if he goes and Volatile, you know, is chasing him, or they hook up, then we're in the right spot. So, you know, they've got to call an audible, obviously, because the complexion changed, but it's still not as black and white as it was before the Lexingtonian scratch, right? So you're probably trying to hedge, and you can't hedge with a good horse like Volatile. You know, see, when I was riding my best, I never paid attention to instructions. I just went out and did what I was going to do because I knew it was the right thing. I can't tell you how many times I rode a great race and finished third or fourth, even following instructions, and got criticized, and then rode a bad race or didn't follow instructions and won, and what a great ride. Or, you know, disregarded the instructions and won, and you rode them just like I wanted you to. So I learned early on, if you win, they're happy. If you lose, they're not. So I'm just going to go ahead and do what I think is right, and I can live with my decisions. You know, sometimes people would get mad at you, but at least when I went home at night, I wasn't going, damn it, why did I listen to John Kimmel and it cost us this race, right? So I just think that, you know, we're so result-oriented that it's a great ride if they win, it's a bad ride if they lose, or, you know, in that thought process. I don't think there was anything that was going to happen Saturday was going to be Volatile. I just don't.
I won't disagree, and we'll have to wait. Based on what Steve said, it looks like one start before Breeders' Cup, and there's going to be plenty, actually, to be looking forward to on Saturday at Del Mar on the sprint front, because the Bing Crosby came up very interesting, and Lexingtonian managed to draw the rail again.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's funny how that works so often. And the, you know, somewhat intriguing maneuver by Baffert to run McKenzie in here. And he's never gone three quarters. So McKenzie shows up Saturday in the Bing Crosby and may be working toward a refashioning as a three-quarter specialist, potentially, Breeders' Cup-wise. And those two meet up with a bunch of other nice horses, Fashionably Fast and Law-Abiding Citizen and Collusion Illusion, tries for a big spot here, too, and big fan of that horse with Mark Glatt. Any Port in a Storm for Blaine Wright, who also is sending An Odor in the Shared Belief. We'll spend some time on that. But let's get back to New York, Rich, with you and some other impressions from the weekend and the first few days joining the broadcast team for Saratoga Live Daily.
Well, I think it's been, you know, some terrific racing. It's so fortunate to be a part of, like, a really, really good team of people. Certainly everybody sees the people in front of the camera, and I think there's really good chemistry. But what, if people saw how hard everybody in the truck and behind the scenes and editing and, you know, getting features and all the stuff they're shooting. And I'm not going to start naming names because I would be horrified if I left anybody out, but we are so fortunate to have the people supporting us that we do. They make our jobs so much easier, and I can't say enough about that. I think that the racing's been terrific. I haven't been on every day, and I catch replays, and I feel like you lose something a little bit in translation when you're not, like, right on top of it. But, you know, I know Sister Charlie, a lot of people were disappointed in that effort. I saw the race different. I mean, Starship Jubilee is very, very good. Call Me Love is good. Sister Charlie is also a six-year-old mare. I said this on air the other day. When I was 20 and I got injured, I'd be out a long time, I could work out for 2 weeks, get on a horse for 3 days, and I was ready to go. Then I got hurt when I was 35. I'd work out for 2 months, get on horses for 2-3 weeks, and then feel like, well, I'm kind of there. So your fitness level and the way your body comes back, it just takes more time as you get older. And it's that same thing with a horse. I thought her race was okay. I thought, listen, going forward, if she starts running like that consistently, you say, well, she lost a step. But I think it's way too early to make that assessment. I thought her race was good. She got there. She looked bigger to me this year, like she had spread out a little bit more, which happens to all of us with age. And I know I thought it was a great race to build on. I think that's something that can spring her forward. And probably a little bit short of her best. You know, she wants to go further than that. That's one of her strengths, is her stamina, not as much, you know, her brilliance, even though she has a great turn of foot. A mile and a 16th is a little sharp for her. So I thought her race was good. I don't see the need to rush to judgment about, well, she got beat. I mean, all horses get beat, or almost all of them. And some of the two-year-olds have been good. I think the racing has been very good. The riding colony is so deep. And you know what, let's give a lot of credit to the horsemen, because you think about how guys had to train horses for the months when there was uncertainty when we were going to come back, you know, in the midst of the pandemic. Trying to keep a horse at that fitness level without going too far, but not letting them down too much, walking that tightrope. I think we've seen some incredible training jobs by people, and that won't get as much attention because it's not as visible. Like, you know, riders get probably too much credit when horses win and too much criticism when they lose because they're the most visible part of the team. But what these horsemen have done, I'll be honest with you, I'm very, very impressed how many guys have been able to keep their horses just where they need them so that they can get them started, you know, quickly without going over the top with them.
Well, and on that topic, and just looking through what we've seen here the first 2 weeks, and of course, four cards opening week, and then we came back with these five, so we're almost 25% in with Wednesday's card. We'll have 10 done. And one part of this, Rich, that makes it a bit of a tricky read is, you know, the lower number of Kentucky outfits that, you know, that sent horses this year. And we are going to see a little bit of a little bit of a trickle in. I saw I saw where Brendan Walsh had a couple of horses coming up this week, for instance. And, of course, yesterday you had Ian Wilkes swing into action with Tez with that win. But for the most part, it's, you know, these first 9 days have been, you know, a heavy dose of, you know, the New York outfits, including, by the way, what is always a fun storyline at Saratoga, some of the small outfits and 25 state bred claimers the other day, last Wednesday to start the week. Bill Youngins, it was great to see him win, the longtime Paracella assistant.
No, absolutely. And you know, you think about the position a lot of the trainers that would ship in for the summer would put in. I mean, it's just such an uncertain time. And the thought of the shipping around and you know, bringing horses here and exposing your help. I mean, I could totally understand why guys wanted to stay home. I mean, I would have been reluctant to leave the state, you know, under those circumstances. But I appreciate any time you see what some of these smaller outfits, especially in Saratoga, even though obviously this year's a little bit odd, it doesn't diminish the accomplishment of winning races in Saratoga. It's difficult. You better bring your A game here because you're going to run into somebody. It's just not that easy. So, you know, when I see smaller outfits get the money, and, you know, this horse paid $90-some-odd, got a terrific ride from Eric Cancel. You know, I tell you what, Eric's been riding very strong. I like what I'm seeing from him. I applaud it. It's great. And like I said, Eddie Davis went in a race the other day, and he, even him more so. Like I saw him, you know, in diapers. You know, so I remember him toddling around the jockey's room. So, other than feeling old, it's great to see.
A couple of spots, and Linda Rice is going to join us, by the way, in about 10 minutes, should touch on a couple of performances, Rich. And yesterday, Happy Saver, that's quickly becoming a story, and, you know, there's more and more, it seems. You also on Saturday up in Woodbine, I just brought it up with Kevin Attard, the performance of the Roger Atfield runner and Spike Sherrill. And there's seemingly a growing number of these lightly raced types that are emerging. And we kind of knew that this would happen. I mean, these were horses that might have shown up otherwise in March, April, May, and instead, you know, they're you know, for a variety, obviously, of reasons, their debuts were delayed. And Happy Saver, 2 for 2, and obviously headed for, you know, nice things. 95 buyer for those that were waiting for the fig, or hadn't seen it last night. And clearly, you know, clearly there's something here that Todd's got to work with.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he was so impressive in his debut. And then for him to come back and stretch out to the mile and an eighth, you know, around two turns and do what he did, I think there's a lot to be said. You know, and it's interesting, too, because, you know, thinking about the second half of this year is going to have so much emphasis. You know, we've always seen, you know, second half of the year, you know, horses emerge, get better. But this year, because of that break from March until we got back, and we're going to see a bunch of horses that maybe wouldn't have gotten nearly the look they've gotten, that, you know, because of the second half of the importance of the second half of the year. But I mean, this horse is a runner, and who's to say that he can't throw his hat in the ring in one of these, you know, in the classics now. I mean, the Derby being Labor Day, this is a runner. This is a serious horse. Any time a three-year-old breaks a mile and an eighth in 150 in Saratoga, it's a very demanding race. And not only did he did it with style. This is a very good horse.
A couple of other, just kind of looking through the last couple of days, Rich. We had Jimmy Bond on TV yesterday, and his horses are hitting on all cylinders.
hitting on all cylinders. And you know, I have so much respect for Jimmy Bond. I just think he's a tremendous horseman. I love that it's a family affair, that it, you know, his wife, his sons, everybody's involved. They take so much pride in what they do. And obviously, primarily being based out of Saratoga, the farms up there and everything, I know how important it is for him to put his best foot forward and shine there. And his horses are running terrific. Even yesterday, I got the charts open. I'm so bad with names now, Steve. This is a problem. Too many concussions. The turf race, the horse got in so much trouble. And I really like this horse, but he's a horse I'll definitely follow back. Earlier in the card, going like a mile or a mile and a 16th with Luis Saez. Where is it? Can't find it. Was it the turf race?
Serratalto, you mean?
No, hold on.
He's the dirt sprinter.
No, this is on the turf. He ran a horse, Reckless Spirit, that just had a world of trouble. He bore out, ran off over heels. But, like, there's a horse that ran a huge race, ran a winning race, and didn't, you know, finish in the middle of the pack because of circumstance that, you know, I'll definitely follow back. But the point is all the horses are running well. That was the race you scratched Kid Chocolate out of.
Yes. I heard yesterday.
But, yeah, no, you know, again, I appreciate and admire when good horsemen, dedicated horsemen win because you know how hard they work and what it entails and what goes into it. So, it's fun to watch that. On that vein, Chris Clement. Christoph's barn is hitting on all cylinders. And
out of control.
I mean, just fantastic. And then, fold into it that his son Miguel has worked his way up the ranks in his father's barn to be one of his main assistants. Has the Saratoga's, string, as soon as Saratoga opened, Miguel was up there with horses. And it seems fairly equally split. The horses that were Miguel in the spring in Saratoga are winning at the same rate the ones that came up with Christoph from Belmont. And, you know, I am very proud of Miguel because I've known him since he's a little kid. And, you know, my son Joey and he growing up together and him being at our house for sleepovers or Joseph going there. And, you know, Christoph's always been so good to my son Joe. Took him to Europe with him one summer, him and Miguel, and got to see, Newmarket and all that. So, it's fun for me. And, you think about Christoph doesn't have quite the numbers of some of the guys, but man, is he hitting on all cylinders. It's just so I appreciate it. And as much as we're taken with the jockey performances, and we should be, I'm taken with a lot of the training performances just as much.
No doubt. And a nice variety of names, filling out the leaderboard. Including, obviously Chad and Christoph Clement with this red hot start and more. Mike Maker, the Maker situation is just head shaking. Taking high priced horses, 62.5, 75,000, 100,000, and stretching them all, not all out long on the grass, but, Michael Way and the Wyckoffs, I mean, they struck on a formula that is really remarkable. And Maker having a mammoth summer, not just in New York.
Yeah, and it is uncanny the way he's able to take these horses and they become these, marathon, these routers on the turf. So consistently, so good. But it's funny, right? We start looking at trainers, and I know, like, some people say, like, Christoph's turf trainer, they get pigeonholed. But, like, actually, they win with all kinds. They do maybe excel or have a specialty. But, like, think about that two-year-old that Christoph unveiled the other day, Momos. I mean, this horse was a rocket out of the gate. Not a very big horse, but what an efficient way of going. I think he's a serious horse going forward. So it's just, again, I think it depends what kind of horses people get. You get not so much with Mike Maker because he's claiming them and he's reaching out and he's seeing something that obviously you said it right. They've hit on a formula. They've hit on something. But again, I'm taking all that. And then I was looking at, like Chad Brown's statistics and Saratoga side, 100 grade ones how many more years is he going to train? I mean, easily 20, 30? I mean, what are those numbers going to look like by the time he decides he's not going to be a trainer anymore? Or, you know, if he ever decides, most guys, they got to carry him out of the barn. But, I mean, he could conceivably just shatter every record ever set. It's unbelievable.
Oh, no doubt. It's... what can you say? It's an amazing number. I mean, the speed at which, and you know, there's going to be big successes in areas that, you know, he's just getting started. When it comes to, you know, the main track types, I mean, it you know, the early part of his career has been dotted with, you know, with these international types that have come his way, and then the purchases that he made abroad, and the success that's fashioning. And then there'll be, you know, soon enough, there'll be more cloud computings, and, you know, and you think about the Philly and Mare sprinters. I mean, he'll just pile up the accolades will be.
Well, you know,
ridiculous.
Years ago, it was that a trainer had far less opportunities than a jockey, because a jockey could ride for, you know, any number of outfits and bounce around. It's almost kind of turned where the leading trainer at the end of the year has more wins than the leading jockey, you know, nationally speaking. And, you know, I'm not being self-deprecating. I'm very proud of the career that I was able to forge, and know that it could have even been better if I didn't get hurt so much, but I rode 32 grade one winners as a jockey. And again, jockeys usually get more opportunity. 100 grade one wins for anybody doing anything is just, it's mind boggling to me.
No, no doubt. What's the schedule this week, Rich? Did you go home last night after did you head down to the farm?
Yep. I was there Wednesday, Thursday last week, went home Thursday night, got back Sunday morning, worked Sunday, got home, came down through Saugerties to pick up my daughter at Hits. We all went to dinner. Now back Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday right now is the schedule. So my plan is when I come up on Wednesday mornings, if I'm doing a back-to-back, I stay up there. But the days I'm not doing a back-to-back, I come home. It's 100 miles. It's not a big deal.
Nice. Nice. And not the same kind of traffic that you encounter going to Belmont and Aqueduct.
No, if you don't have to go over the Frog's Neck or the Whitestone Bridge, you're way ahead of the game.
Exactly. Well, Rich, the shows have been great. It's funny. I catch different portions sometimes early, sometimes, you know, later. The mix and match, you know, the different contingent that's on hand, but it's terrific, and glad you got into the rotation this week, and we'll look forward to another big week, including Saturday's. Big Saturday week after week, and the Whitney coming up, and more, and then Travers Day, and this week felt like, you know, more like Saratoga. There's more people in town, and we're getting there. It's obviously the atmosphere at the track is bizarre, but
it is bizarre. But you know, it's funny, when we're on the paddock set, they have that area set up for owners.
Yes.
You know, and again, it's limited how many people can be there, but at least there's activity and people are, you know, getting something to eat or, you know, refreshment, and you know, you feel a little bit normalcy. It's definitely more strange when we're on the track side set up by the eighth pole, because the horses turn for home, and all you can hear is the hoofbeats and the riders, and you know, you usually hear the crowd at that point. It drowns everything else out. And pretty funny when you hear, you know, one rider cursing out another rider because he got squeezed or something, and you can hear it clear as day. So it's, you know, it is bizarre, but, you know, listen, it's just a tough time for everybody, and we'll all get through this together, and one day we'll look back on it and go, wow, do you remember 2020?
Exactly. Is right. Richie, I appreciate it. Rich Migliori, everybody, and we'll catch up. I'll see you probably when I think we're going to get back to broadcasting the track Wednesday, weather permitting, although it's supposed to be a hot week, but we'll probably come out for Wednesday, either Wednesday, Thursday, or Wednesday, Friday, some combination of a couple of days this week.
Let me get on with you one day.
Absolute. This was great. Rich Migliori, one of his Monday visits, for some recapping as Saratoga continues. And we got a little bit more. We're going to stay right here. Linda Rice case. Linda Rice is going to join us. I'll give her a call. And while we do that, I will tell you that I mentioned that group that includes McKinsey and Lexingtonian for the Bing Crosby, and the shared belief being run early on the card as the second on Saturday. And Baffert entered Uncle Chuck in addition to the two that he had talked about entering anyway, which was Thousand Words and Cezanne. And Uncle Chuck, he had talked about coming here. So this may be a, for Travers next week, week after. We'll get, I imagine that part of this is a, precautionary in case anything happens to the other, one or the other. So Uncle Chuck, Thousand Words, and Odor. And Kiss Today Goodbye, Eric Kruljack, a maiden winner that then, in February, that then tried Allowance Company, and it kind of a throwout. Honor AP draws the five, and Cezanne, the six. So the shared belief PPs are already out and available for you. And Linda Rice is joining us. Always a treat. And we go back to Friday and the quick call. And Linda gets a big grade three stake win for Turned Aside, an American Pharoah. Linda, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
Well done. And always nice early in the meet to knock out a stake win. Let's talk a little bit. This was a good group, actually. It wasn't a big group, but talk about Turn the Sides development and winning on Friday.
We ran against Jack and Noah again for the fourth time, and up to this point, he had beaten us on three different occasions. So I was hoping that over a different course, we might be able to turn the tables on him. And, Turned Aside's been training terrific. Last time in the Circat at Belmont, it was his first start off a long layoff since last November, finished second to Noah and Jack, and then once again trained great into the race. And we got a little lucky. Jack and Noah broke a step slow, and Jose Lascano rode him beautifully. We had discussed being a little more aggressive with him early rather than sitting off the pace and rating and thinking that we could run that horse down. We were going to press him early and see if we could beat him that way. So anyway, it turned out well.
Well, and for Paul Pompa, another graded stake win at Saratoga because, of course, Country Grammar getting things started for him on opening day. So the first 9 days, first 7 days of the meet, Paul with a couple of graded stake wins. This is a homebred of his as well, out of the Warfront Mare Sustained, an American Pharoah colt. Took a couple of starts to get him going, and you've had him, being out of the Warfront Mare, and certainly with American Pharoah's family, there's plenty of turf prowess, and you've really only thought about the turf with him. Did you entertain any dirt at any point?
He just has the look of a turf horse. He has a large turf foot. He's soft in the pasture, and so right from the beginning I thought he looked really like a turf sprinter. And Paul agreed with me. So, but he's trained well enough on the dirt that we thought, okay, at some point, if one of these races gets rained and comes off the turf, we'll try him then. But he's been so good on the grass so far. I really think as a 4- and 5-year-old, this horse could really develop into a top turf sprinter.
Well, it seems like he's well on his way. And, you know, last year when he broke his maiden, you then tried the Atlantic Beach, and why wouldn't you? Yeah, fairly short turnaround. And actually, he ran fine in there. And Jack and Noah and he are essentially crafting a little bit of a rivalry.
Yes, they are.
Coming out of this, the Sir Cat, so second off the seasonal debut, and actually, so for a horse like this, the pandemic didn't really delay much. I mean, you were going to wait until, you know, if Aqueduct had run, you know, you might have been ready to, you know, to run him once, perhaps, you know, before coming to Belmont, but you didn't seem to really lose anything with him.
Yeah, you know, last winter we discussed, you know, after he won his second allowance race in the around Thanksgiving, we talked about giving him a break. We sent him to a cow at Eddie Woods Farm where an Eddie had broke him and trained him for Paul. And I kind of encouraged him to just, let's just stop in this horse and give him 60 days break from training. And I didn't really think we should send him to Miami. The turf course in Miami was in pretty rough condition. And I thought he'd done enough as a two-year-old and just thought he would benefit from a chance to grow up a little. And we did plan to go to Keeneland with him in April, but of course the pandemic shut Keeneland racing down. And I thought we may have gotten a start in May, and of course that didn't happen. So we did get delayed a little bit, but I think that he is no worse for wear for that break in training.
Rest of the meet and going forward, and I just want to check for a number. 89 buyer out of this. What do we got? The Troy is the Troy the next, or is that for the girls?
For older horses, Steve. There's a race called the Mahoney that is maybe third week of August. So that's a natural spot for him. It's not graded, but it's another turf sprint for straight 3 year olds. And then Paul and I discussed nominating him to the race at Kentucky Downs, which is September 14th or 15th. It's a big purse. It's 6 furlongs, $500,000 for three-year-olds sprinting on the turf. It's an unusual course, so they don't necessarily all take to it, but it's certainly going to be on our radar.
Nice. Well, always happy for Paul, and who gives, you know, generously to the game, and he's having a good summer right away. And your summer is going nicely. You got horses running well, because also on Friday, earlier on the card, about an hour earlier, that Magnolia's Lady, that was a nice maiden breaker.
Yes, it was. You know, the race had there were like three others in there that were, you know, well thought of. And I knew it wasn't an easy race. I thought it was pretty competitive. And we looked a bit of an outsider, but I thought with a better trip, she might be able to win. So I was delighted that she got that done.
What can you tell us about the backstory here, third career start?
You know, she is a half-sister to a filly that I campaigned named Split Time for Chick Stable. And Split Time was a nice dirt horse. She ran long on the dirt. She won at 7/8 at Laurel. She won quite a few stakes to Bowery in New York. Was a closing sprinter. And this filly, I think, may transfer to the dirt pretty well also. And I also think she may stretch out to 7/8 a mile. So I think that she's got a pretty good future ahead of her. I don't think she's limited to turf. I think she will probably switch surfaces and may end up being a better dirt horse than she is in the grass.
Nice. Very nice. Well, we will obviously look forward and see where she turns up. And then let's give a couple of thoughts to what's coming up for you. And before we talk about Travers, some thoughts, Linda, coming up this week, Wednesday, Thursday. You got a busy day Wednesday with some claimers, a maiden claimer, Belitza. Then you've got you're involved in that turf allowance in the seventh and also in the eighth. Talk about some of the upcoming starters this week, reaching for the PPs.
Well, we do. We have a busy day Wednesday, and, you know, a lot of different horses in. You know, I think we have some live horses in, but, of course, you know how difficult it is to win at Saratoga. Sometimes you go over there, your best, you think who you think is your best chance to win a race disappoints, and then someone else manages to get there first. So, but we have five horses in on Wednesday, and they're all, you know, have a chance. I think that the two other than allowance are ready for prime time. He's coming off a layoff. He may need a race. Blackjack Davy has trained very well. I really didn't want to go from a one-turn mile and 16th to a two-turn mile and 8th with him, but it's at Saratoga, you're either shortening him up to 7 furlongs,
right,
one turn 7, or you're going a mile and 8. So we're going to try the mile and 8th and hope for the best there with him. He's shown quite a bit of promise, though. So I'm excited about running him. And then I have a couple others in American Power, very competitive race. And then Beliza, she looks like she's in a pretty good spot there as well.
The other horse that you've got in the allowance, the mile and the eighth, too early.
Yes, he's a homebred of Vivian Malloy's Dishon Farm, and he broke his maiden in an off-the-turf race there at a mile and an eighth. I'm not sure he's going to make Wednesday's race this week.
Okay.
You know, right now, he could be a possible scratch.
Gotcha. Well, if I was Andy Serling, I'd mention that something about horses coming out, but I won't.
Yes, Andy loves to heckle me about that. He loves to heckle me.
Yes, he does. Then looking ahead to Thursday, pretty nice looking group, actually. These 40,000s, we scratched out a one yesterday, Linda, actually, that was an allowance race disguised as a 40 non-winners of two. And you're MTO in there, so it doesn't matter. And it's going to be a hot week. What about Playwright in the fifth?
Yeah, he's an MTO as well. So MTOs in,
yep,
on Thursday. But it doesn't look like we're going to get any rain up there.
No. No.
I don't think we'll get to run. Friday, I think I have a couple in as well. I can't think who it is off the top of my head.
Hold on. I will tell you right away. Here we go. Friday, and I don't have the PPs, but Friday you've got Do You Know Who I Am, O'Shea Can You See, Icy Dude, and Princess Fazia.
Right. Princess Fazia's in on the turf. Icy Dude's an MTO. Do You Know Who I Am. So Do You Know Who I Am is a first-time starter, two-year-old in a maiden 50. She drew the one hole. The one post is kind of tough for two-year-olds, and I think this filly actually may want more distance. So we're hoping to get a decent showing out of her, you know, at that distance, and, you know, a place to get her started. Princess Wazia, I haven't looked at the PPs yet, but she ran very nicely in her first start back off a long layoff. So, you know, hopefully she'll like the course up there. She's run two races so far, both at Belmont, and ran well at Belmont. Hopefully that form will transfer to Saratoga. Icy Dude is an MTO, and I think the other one's an MTO as well.
Let's turn to the big horse, and Max Player. Saw some notes from the team out of Pat McKenna's office, and you seem very content and looking forward to getting Max Player in to the Travers.
Yes, I'm actually at Belmont today. I came down last night after the races and breezed Max Player this morning here at Belmont on the training track. And so he breezed last Monday, this Monday, the Monday before, or the week before that. And so, you know, things are going smoothly into the Travers. Obviously, it's going to be a tough race with Tis the Law, and Uncle Chuck, I think, will be in there, and, of course, Paul Pompa's other horse. So it'll be a strong race. I don't know how big a field it'll be, but I'm sure it'll be very contentious. So, but we're excited about running the Travers with a horse that looks like he belongs.
It seems like it, and points-wise, you know, the opportunity to, you know, garner more and be positioned to you know, to go to Derby. Talk about the mile and a quarter for him.
Yeah, I don't think the mile and a quarter is a problem for him at all. You know, he wanted a mile and an eighth, the Withers, February 1st. That's pretty early in their three-year-old year. And so he really looks like a horse that'll relish the distance. I'm hoping they set up a pretty fast pace in front of him with Uncle Chuck. Looks like he's has some speed, and Tis the Law hopefully will be chasing him. And I'm hoping they set fast for action so that maybe they'll come back to us.
Yeah. Well, Max Player with an opportunity. And, you know, Linda, you mentioned the, you know, going down to Belmont, and, you know, you were one of many trainers who could have brought, you know, 30 or more up to Saratoga, and you and others opted to, you know, keep kind of a tight string, 10, 12, and rotate them back and forth. Explain, you know, your approach this year to the Saratoga situation.
Well, of course, we found ourselves in such unusual times. And, you know, with racing up there, first of all, without the fans, without the owners being able to come, and then, Frank, most importantly, my staff was really not excited about going up there. They really didn't want to move locations and expose themselves and their families to different circumstances as far as contamination with the virus. And a lot of them have children, and typically they would take their children to Saratoga with them and have them in summer camps that they really enjoyed. This year, those opportunities are not there. The camps are shut down, so they really didn't have a good situation for their families. And, you know, when I looked at all of those variables, we decided to leave the bulk of our stable at Belmont and train down here and then ship up to race for the most part. So that's what we've been doing, and so far it's been going pretty well. It's different for us, and I have to do more traveling. You know, I've been coming down Sunday night. I go back up on Wednesday morning. At least I have the last 2 weeks. So, but it's going okay so far.
No, there's a certain logic to this, frankly. Kind of rotating out, you know, run them, send them back home, bring up the ones that are going to run over the next week to 10 days. You know, and obviously some of the, you can leave the two-year-olds at home too and let them, you know, on a quieter, you know, training track at Belmont, you know, that opportunity. Although I suppose with as many people that stayed downstate, it's not as quiet as it usually is at Belmont.
Yeah, it's pretty busy at Belmont, and, you know, but, I mean, the horses that, you know, sometimes, usually we'll take some horses up there that we think may not race during the meet, but their owners live in Albany or upstate New York. They're going to be there for the meet. They'd enjoy coming out, watch them train, you know, those type of things. And this year we've left horses train at Belmont that are either not going to race, or maybe they just came back from, you know, time off or vacation, surgeries, whatever.
Sure.
And we're bringing those horses along at Belmont instead of taking them to Saratoga with us. So it's, you know, it's a different approach, but I'm okay with it, and it's going okay so far.
Speaking of some horses that might be on the comeback trail, I want to mention one or two maiden winners or some horses that haven't shown back up on the radar. Honey Money, the nice central banker, for Mrs. Belinsky.
Yes, Honey Money, she showed up with a hind end lameness after her maiden win.
Yeah.
And we diagnosed it to be like a precondylar condition in a hind ankle.
Ugh.
She didn't require any surgery or anything. She just needed some time off. So we stopped on her. I've had several horses like that, you know, I've given time off to. A Wicked Trick is another one. He was flat, not training the way I'd hoped, so I stopped on him. Prince of Pharaohs, another horse of Mr. Belinsky's, that was showing some signs of wear and tear, needing a break. So I've stopped on some of those horses, but I expect to see all of them back, you know, in September and hopefully for a big winter at Aqueduct.
Well, already a handful of wins, including Grit and Glory, and Cold Hard Cash. Blind Willie McTell ran well as well opening weekend. And Icy Dude, a winner at Finger Lakes the other day. And things seemingly going pretty well. And Linda, always a pleasure. Good luck this week. And certainly looking forward to Max Player and all the excitement with the, you know, the big group of owners that got involved and Travers start. And I suppose some of those will get a chance to attend Travers Day, some of the owners.
Yeah, I hope so. It wouldn't be without, the same without them.
Linda Rice, everybody, and you can follow Linda on Twitter. And Linda, you know, before you go, I've got to mention, you know, Casey's daughter, her name is Jackson, J-A-X-S-O-N. And so whenever I Love Jackson runs, I let Casey know. And they were watching the other day. She kind of just, you know, kind of chased around. But I'm going to have to go see Adam and get one of I Love Jackson's win pictures for Casey's daughter.
Okay, that sounds great. I didn't know that Jackson had a fan there, but that's terrific.
And plus, not to mention all of us that go for ice cream at Jackson's in Dania, you know. So that name was a winner on this show from the start because of Casey's daughter, and we've been following. So she'll probably run before the end of the meet, right?
Yes, he should make another start, probably close to the end of the meet, Steve.
Excellent. Linda Rice, everybody, and coming up soon, Max Player. In the meantime, turned aside all foes in the quick call on Friday. Paul Pompa with two graded stake wins already at the meet, and gunning for a Travers 2 with Country Grammar. Let's take the top of the hour break. We're a little bit past. Brad Free is going to join us. We'll look at some of the action from Del Mar, and because they're racing today, we'll get a couple of opinions from Brad as well. Back after this at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Pletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Horse Players, HRTV.com is your definitive online source for thoroughbred racing, the inside information you need to make the smart picks.
Away they go.
Log on for live racing for the finest tracks in the country, including Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Arlington Park. also enjoy hours of racing shows on demand, like Against the Odds or Inside Information. Our English page includes show jumping, dressage, eventing, and more. And our Western page highlights reining, cutting, rodeo, and even trail riding. Subscribe now to HRTV.com and receive your first month for free. Horse players and horse lovers, your new destination is HRTV.com. HRTV.com, the network for horse sports.
Don't miss the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival featuring the 147th Belmont Stakes. Get your tickets now for 3 days of championship racing and entertainment at BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes Racing Festival, June 4th through 6th. Summer starts here.
Serious action.